Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And it's Saturday, and I would go into the vault, but my feet are melting.
It's all this green goo that you were stepping in, and now it's dissolving our feet.
By a wonderful act of coincidence. Today we're going to be exploring the quest for Hollywood acid. This is an episode that originally aired May 12th, 2016. It's about the idea of that perfect movie acid, the acid that burns right through everything. And this episode, I think, was highly inspired by a scene in the movie Batman Forever where a guy gets locked in a vault with a bunch of acid.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It's perfect.
I think we discuss it in the episode. I will just wager that I don't need to go ahead and explain it here.
Right. The other major touchstone, of course, being the blood of the xenomorph.
Yeah.
But what is – you were the one, I think, who came up with the idea for this episode because you were watching these movies with these fabulous acids in them and saying, well, what would that be? What actual naturally occurring or even artificial acid could eat through the hull of a ship like this and have such instant flesh-melting capabilities?
Right. So we just thought we'd have a little rapid corrosion party.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Hey, real quick at the top of the show here, if you want to explore more of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is our mothership. That is the main website where you will find all of our episodes. You'll find videos, blog posts, links out to our social media accounts. And if you want to support the show, a great way to do it is to simply rate and review us wherever you get the show.
Yeah. So, Robert, I've got a question for you.
All right, hit me, Joe.
I'm going to take you to a dark place. This might be a little traumatic.
Okay.
Okay. Do you remember 1990s, the Batman movies of the 1990s? Think back to Batman Forever.
Ooh, that was a dark time.
Directed by Joel Schumacher, starring Val Kilmer as Batman, and Tommy Lee Jones in it as Two-Face, a very manic Two-Face, if I recall.
Yeah, he was kind of all over the place with that one, wasn't
he? Snarling a lot and kind of whipping his body around in a frenzy.
And that, of course, was he acid scarred in that telling of the
I believe he was. Yeah. They so the story of Two-Face in that version is that he's Harvey Dent is the lawyer who becomes Two-Face. I believe he's a district attorney and he gets scarred on one part of his face and it drives him insane. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they go deep into the backstory in Batman Forever. But anyway, it's Tommy Lee Jones and he's going wild and he's really trying to get Batman in this one. So there's a scene where Batman goes into a bank vault where there is a vault guard of some kind tied up. And when Batman goes in to rescue this guard, the door slams shut and acid starts pouring out of all of the, I believe, out of the safe deposit boxes.
Okay.
So a lot of people maybe were keeping their precious acid in this vault. And the vault guard realizes what's happening as Two-Face taunts them that they're going to die in this bank vault. And the guard says, "Oh no, it's boiling acid." There's like a 7-second YouTube clip of this that I watch at least once a week. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I watched this for the first time, I think, because I don't know that I've actually seen this this Batman film. I was super into the first two.
Yeah, the
when I was a kid.
Batman,
yeah, the Burton Batmans were great, and I wanted to get into the Schumacher ones, and it didn't work. And I think part of the reason is that boiling acid, it tightly sums up everything about those films.
Well, exactly. And one of the things that I find so funny about it is, well, if Two-Face is trying to kill them, why couldn't it be, "Oh no, it's boiling water"?
Right.
I mean, if it's boiling, what difference does it make?
Or if it's acid, or hey, if it's just water, if you're flooding a sealed room,
yeah.
Right? I mean, it can be that.
It's room temperature water.
Yeah.
We're going to drown. And so this obviously brings in a favorite old trope of the superhero genre, but really it's all throughout the movies. And this is movie acid.
Oh, yeah.
Notice that the guard in the vault doesn't say what the chemical compound is. It's not like he recognizes, "Oh, no, it's hydrofluoric acid." No, it's just acid. Mm-hmm. And this kind of acid plays a role in all of our favorite, you know, our favorite cartoons, science fiction and superhero stuff. It's movie acid. It's Hollywood acid. So you're probably familiar with this. You remember lots of other scenes from Batman, I bet, mm-hmm. right? It's always in Batman. Like the villain captures Batman, the Penguin or somebody's got Batman tied up on a rope dangling over a vat of acid.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a vat of acid is just one of those things. It's a perfect human technological achievement that we can then utilize for menacing purposes. You know, it's like it's like having a whole bunch of molten steel on hand or a hydraulic press.
Right. It represents all of the evils of human industry and mm-hmm. sort of the cold killer nature of technology. But at the same time, it's a great just sort of like a vertical peril. Mm-hmm. It's like a thing to have below you. It's like a pit of piranhas or a pit of crocodiles or something. In
exactly,
this case, it's
yeah.
a pit of molecules that want to play nice with all of your skin. So what are the properties of Hollywood acid or movie acid, we might call it? I want to list a few, and maybe you'll have some of your own.
Okay, go for it.
One of them is that it causes severe and immediate burns to the skin and soft tissues. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, just immediate scarification,
yeah.
meltification. And we can run through some examples of that in a minute.
Right. So another one is if you put organic material, such as a Batman, into a vat of acid, it will kill and then rapidly dissolve that organism. So it has not only killing and burning powers, but also liquefaction powers.
Okay. Yes.
You with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Another one is that the colors can vary, but it's never clear like water. You notice that?
Right.
The acid in the movies, it always is usually opaque, usually a shade of green, purple, or orange, I find.
Yeah. Green, I think, is the big one. And I'll mention a few examples that have instilled that idea in me. But like if I was to draw a picture, doodle something with acid on the side of a piece of paper, it would be green.
Yeah. A good example of the green acid is in that classic episode of The Simpsons where Milhouse becomes Fallout Boy.
Yes.
And there's Radioactive Man. They're filming a scene from the movie.
That's real acid. I want to see goggles, people.
Yeah, exactly. Goggles, they do nothing. It's great. But another thing about the acid is that it displays ambient bubbling. So
yeah.
You don't have to heat it up. It just naturally boils like a pot on the boil.
Well, that's so you can look at it and know that it's acid. Like mm-hmm. it's bubbling. It's green. it could not be more acid.
Yeah. And of course, the final factor is often kept in a giant vat, though sometimes also kept in something that squirts it out.
Do you want to keep it in an open vat, open top, with some room to have some sort of a chain system in place and some pulleys or whatever, however you want to position your nemesis above it.
Right. Now, Robert, tell me your movie acid story. What are your memories from childhood of beloved movie acid?
Oh, I have several. But probably the most scarring was at a young age, like too young of an age, I saw RoboCop.
Who let you watch RoboCop at a young age?
I think it was like an uncle's house, and it was on. But then again, RoboCop is so violent. Uh-huh. It's hard to determine exactly what age during a childhood is appropriate to watch RoboCop. A RoboCop, an R-rated, ultra-violent picture for which there were toys, and I think still are toys produced.
Another thing, to say about RoboCop is that the level of violence in it isn't incidental. It's deliberately hyper-violent, I would say, in a satirical reasons.
Yeah, it's a great film, I think back about to my seeing it as a young person, and I'm a little appalled at times. But yeah, there's a scene where, and I'm sure anyone who's seen this has this burned into their mind as well, one of the villain's henchmen gets just coated in acid.
I believe his name's Emil.
Is that it? Is that his name?
I think so.
So Emil gets coated in acid. I don't even remember how it happened. Like, did RoboCop shoot a vat of acid that was behind him in an industrial setting?
Well, there's a lot of sort of ambient industry in the movie. It takes place in a dystopian future Detroit, and they're like old factories with what we would presume are just vats of toxic waste and acid hanging around. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and somehow this guy gets it splashed all over him during a car chase scene.
Yeah, and then he comes just zombie-like walking out, shambling, totally meltified. And then a car runs over. Like, there's a second there where you're just horrified. Like, oh, this poor guy. Look at the state he's in. And then, like, RoboCop, or one of the villain, I think it's the main villain, hits him with the car, and he just, like, splatters like a water balloon full of blood and goo.
Yeah, it's the dad from That 70s Show who hits him with the car.
And I never trusted That 70s Show because of RoboCop. I knew what he was capable of.
Clarence Boddicker, he's a great villain. Yeah. Yeah, so he hits him with the car, and he just turns to liquid. He's like a bag of soup. I remember the villain, he turns on the windshield wipers. Yeah. After that. Yeah, it's gross. But it's also, there's tons of acid in video games, right? Video games love this. I guess because acid's probably fun to animate.
Yeah, and a lot of games, if you're doing a platform game, right, it's a wonderful thing to have to fall into and sort of bounce out of. But my favorite example is from Mortal Kombat 2, which was like a major, major game for me when I was younger. And in that, you have two wonderful uses of acid. You have a stage called, I think, the Deadpool, where you're fighting on a platform, and there's just green acid fills the room around.
Is it ambiently bubbling?
I can't remember if it's bubbling or not. But if you uppercut your opponent into the acid at the end of the match for the fatality, then they just splash, they scream, they disappear under the acid, and then when they float up to the top, they're just a completely clean skeleton.
Oh, how long does that take?
1 second, 2 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, that game also introduced the character Reptile, who is a lizard man ninja, which I just, you just take that for granted now. But he also spits acid, so he takes his little mask off and goes, "Hotsh!" And this green glob comes flying across the screen and burns you.
One of the most horrible acid scenes I remember from a kid was from the movie The Fly. We shouldn't dwell on this.
Yeah.
Kind of great movie, but The Fly has digestive enzymes, I suppose, that he sort of like spits out on people to homogenize their flesh.
Yeah, I think there's an early scene where Brundlefly, if you haven't seen it, first of all, go see it. But mad scientist and a fly, their DNA is spliced via teleportation accident. And there's a scene where he's recording himself feeding on something like just a bunch of sugary junk food.
You know?
And you don't actually see it happen. You just hear it. And it's horrific. And then, of course, later he weaponizes this biological effect.
And speaking of weaponized acid biology, we would have to mention, I guess this will be our final example, the xenomorph from the Alien films. So in Ridley Scott's Alien, you might remember this, the old classic Alien, we first see the xenomorph's acid blood during the scene where, if you'll remember, John Hurt's character gets an alien parasite attached to his face called a face hugger.
Yeah, it like burns through his helmet to attach it to
his
face.
Yeah, it comes through his face mask and then it's attached to his face. And they're trying to decide if they should cut it off of him on the spaceship. And Ian Holm eventually decides to cut one of its fingers off to see if they can remove it, and it squirts blood. And this blood hits the floor, and it sizzles when it splashes on the floor and then continues to eat right through the material of the spacecraft's floor and then drops down through like two more floors, I think, through the levels until it eventually stops reacting a few levels down.
Yeah,
it
finally neutralizes and it goes through the entire hole.
And then Tom Skerritt's character, Captain Dallas, he says he's never seen anything like that before except, quote, molecular acid, which is funny. That term doesn't really make any sense since all acids are composed of molecules. And in the sequels, they correct this by saying the aliens have concentrated acid for blood, which does make more sense in the sense that they're suggesting it's not like vinegar or some other friendly acid that's highly diluted to a safe concentration. It's a highly concentrated, strong acid. But later in this episode, we should explore exactly what might be going on in terms of the alien's blood, how it could be that acidic if there were something truly like that in nature.
Yes, we will circle back around to the xenomorphs at the end.
But anyway, so why this obsession with acid? We love this stuff. I mean, it keeps showing up in our media all the time, even though we can't be bothered to learn all the chemistry of exactly what chemicals are out there that could do real harm to our bodies. So it's always just acid. You know, there's some acid.
It's just basically like a magical corrosive substance.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to talk today about the real science of strong acids. And I don't know, to what extent you can find chemicals in the real world that match up to the movie acid and how close you can get.
Yes.
Okay, so to give you the basics before we get into the strongest acids out there, the movie acid, we should do a real simple overview of acids, bases, and pH. I'm not going to turn this into a chemistry class, but we do need to sort of explain how they work. So first of all, picture your periodic table and then go directly to square one, hydrogen. It's the most basic atom in the universe. It's got one proton and one electron. And most of the hydrogen in the universe has no neutrons. But if you want to add one or two, you can get deuterium or tritium. But we're not really concerned with that right now. So your hydrogen atom, one proton, one electron, and it's electrically neutral because it's balanced like that. The electron has a negative charge. The proton has a positive charge. If hydrogen loses its electron, it becomes a hydrogen ion, which is just a proton. It's one single lonely proton with an unbalanced positive charge. And of course, nature hates that unbalanced positive charge. Mm-hmm. It wants to get back together. So that lonely proton is going to be looking for a way to join up with something that has a negative charge and again become electrically neutral. So water is made of the electrically neutral molecule H2O. That's one oxygen atom bonded with two hydrogen atoms. And if one of the two hydrogen atoms in the water molecule breaks free, it just runs off, says, I'm going to do my own thing, free of a water molecule and leaves its electron with that water molecule, you're left with a hydrogen ion, which is just that positively charged free proton, and then a hydroxide molecule, which is OH minus. It's a molecule with a negative charge with one oxygen atom, one hydrogen atom. Now, this can happen naturally in water sometimes. This is called the ionization of water or auto-ionization of water. You can just have water sitting there in a glass, and some subset of the molecules within it are going to undergo this reaction where a hydrogen proton leaves one of the molecules, joins to another one, and that creates this hydroxide molecule, OH negative, negatively charged, and then also a molecule called hydronium, which is H3O. It's a positively charged water molecule that has three hydrogens on it. And so here's where we get into acids and bases. There are several different chemical definitions, but we're going to go with the Bronsted-Lowry definition because, you know, which other definition would you go with? This is obviously the best. It's named after the Danish chemist Johannes Nicolaus Bronsted and the English chemist Thomas Martin Lowry. And so the way it goes is this. An acid is a hydrogen ion donor. In other words, a proton donor. It's a chemical that when you put it into water, it wants to send free hydrogen ions, these protons, out into the solution. And in turn, that increases the concentration of hydronium, or H3O, that positively charged molecule I was talking about. The opposite of this is a base. A base is a hydrogen ion recipient, or a proton recipient. When you put it into water, it wants to increase the hydroxide concentration. It makes more molecules of OH minus, the negatively charged variant of water.
So what would be an example of this?
Okay, so one would be, for example, hydrochloric acid. So you put hydrochloric acid in water and it wants to break apart and donate that positively charged hydrogen ion to the water, creating some negatively charged chloride and positively charged hydronium. And here HCl is the acid and water is the base by the Bronsted-Lowry definition. But all this stuff about acids and bases is generally going to be concerning aqueous solutions. In other words, putting stuff in water. And so this has a really awesome name, by the way, and it's known as protonation.
Oh, nice.
So when you add a strong acid to a water, because you're giving away those positively charged hydrogen ions, you're protonating the water. And of course, on the other hand, you can use a base to deprotonate a solution.
Okay.
One more piece of terminology. You've probably heard of the strength of acids and bases expressed in terms of pH. They say, you know, an acid has a pH of 3 or pH of 6. What does that mean? pH is just the concentration of those hydrogen ions in a solution. So normal water, that's neutral. And the neutral pH is usually said to be 7. So that would be 1 times 10 to the negative 7 moles per liter of hydrogen ions. And we're not going to stay on this math for a long time, but just to be clear, a mole is just a measure of how many molecules you got in something. And moles per liter would be the concentration of how many molecules you've got per liter of water. Specifically, a mole is 6.02 and then some more numbers, but basically 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd. There's a lot of molecules out there.
Yeah.
And so this is expressed by saying it has a pH of 7. So if you have a compound with a lower pH, that's going to get more acidic. They donate protons harder. They say, take these protons, take them.
I like to put that in perspective, what lemon juice is a 2, I believe.
Yeah, that's about right. In fact, we can read a few examples of pHs in a minute. And then also on the other end of the scale, compounds with higher pH values are stronger bases. They're more alkaline. They steal protons harder. They're recipients of protons. And so just to give a few examples on the pH scale, I just found an illustration online that gives some basic general ideas. Like we said, distilled water is going to be a 7. It's neutral. That seawater is going to be a little more of a base. It's more like an 8. And then you get a baking soda solution. It's a little more. It's like 8 point something. Bleach is going to be like 13. That's a strong base. But then going lower on the scale, acids are going to be things like vinegar is going to be around a 3 or a 4. Orange juice is going to be around a 3 or a 4.
Interesting that vinegar is between orange juice and carbonated beverages, with carbonated beverages being a higher acidic level than vinegar.
Oh, yeah. They usually say Coca-Cola is pretty darn acid, mm-hmm. isn't it?
I think that was their original slogan. But,
right. Yeah. Taste the acid. And then once you get really low, closer to 0 on the scale, you've got something like battery acid, just really intense, strong acid. Take all the protons, take them all.
Right. And that is often where we see at least the idea of Hollywood acids in that area. The idea like this is battery acid, this is industrial acid, this is highly corrosive stuff that'll pick your skeleton dry.
Yeah. But I should point out that we're going to be talking about how strongly acids can dissolve things like organic materials today. Mm-hmm. And so because the acid that reacts with you does so through a chemical reaction, the chemicals involved matter. So some acids might actually have a lower pH than others, but still be less harmful. For example, hydrofluoric acid, one we're going to talk about today, is one of the most deadly acids out there, but it doesn't necessarily have the lowest pH.
Mm-hmm. And then when we're talking about the deadly aspects of acids, another thing that we'll touch on too is that sometimes it's not only the corrosive aspects of the acid, but what happens when it when it undergoes a chemical reaction, what kind of gases can be emitted. There are some of these examples. You end up with toxic gases that are released when the acid comes into contact with the right substance.
Exactly. And another thing tying into hydrofluoric acid, which we're going to talk about a little more in a minute, the danger associated with it isn't just from, say, topical burns. It doesn't just burn you from the outside in and kill you that way. By getting into your skin and then getting into your blood, it can cause systemic problems that can kill you, for example, by causing a heart attack.
Right. And prolonged exposure to some of these have also been linked to cancer. So there are a number of ways that these dangerous substances can harm you.
Yeah, okay. So let's say, based on everything we've just looked at, you're going to try to dissolve some organic material, such as a Batman.
Okay.
So you have a very strong acid, so you've got a vat of it, and you put that acid into an aqueous solution, meaning water. So you've got your acid dissolved into water, and then you put your Batman in. What's going to happen to your Batman? Well, depending on the makeup of the solution, what's probably going to happen is that the acidic solution will begin breaking the chemical bonds of molecules on the outer surface of the Batman so that, you know, the excess of protons and charged molecules can form bonds with other molecules in that Batman material. And assuming it can eat through the Batman suit, it's going to start hacking up the lipids and the protein molecules in the Batman's skin, forming new chemical bonds and slowly turning this imbalanced acid-water Batman solution into a more homogeneous gloop, basically.
Bat gloop.
Yes. However, there are probably some materials in the Batman and the Batman suit that will not react with the acid, meaning you're not likely to end up with a perfectly homogeneous mixture. You might get some gloop with some lumps in it.
Okay.
Essentially, the villain's acid just wants to bring Batman into equilibrium. Isn't that a nice way of thinking about it?
Yeah, he is definitely a character out of balance with the world.
Right. And so unless somebody perhaps comes along with a dump truck full of a weak base like baking soda to pour in and neutralize the solution, that's what's going to happen. Though I'm not sure exactly how that would work out for the Batman if he's still in the vat while they're neutralizing it.
Ooh, yeah. Would there be an explosion? An eruption?
I don't know.
I think the classic Batman TV series, of course, with its rigorous approach to science, you would probably see Robin show up, dump the base in, everything would turn to a big foam, and there would be like a foam slippery dance fight
Biff,
party.
Pow!
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody does the twist. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to look at a rogues gallery of dangerous acids.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. Well, let's roll through a few examples of some powerful, potent, real-world acids. And again, we're going to try not to just really chemistry class you too much on these, but we're going to roll through some of the basic health ratings and attributes of these substances.
Well, we talked about early on the idea of these acids that occur in biology. And mm-hmm. one acid that definitely occurs in biology is hydrochloric acid.
Oh, yes.
HCl. So this is going to be a bond between hydrogen and chlorine, and it gets the job done.
And I want to note that these properties are coming off of the MSDS. That's a material safety data sheet.
It's for a good sheet.
Yeah. If you're interested in pretty much any substance, any chemical substance, you can generally find an MSDS on the internet for this, and it can be a little bit interesting, a little bit technical, mm-hmm. Depending on how much of it you read. So the appearance of hydrochloric acid, it would not work in a Mortal Kombat game because it's colorless, though it is a fuming liquid. Has a pungent odor of hydrogen chloride, which means your dude in the bank vault with Batman might be able to sniff it out.
Yeah.
And when it comes to its solubility, infinite solubility in water with slight evolution of heat. Not necessarily boiling, but slight evolution of heat.
Right. And so the MSDS comes with these ratings. It's a great rating system. It's kind of like the MPAA for acids. Know what you're getting ahead of time.
Yeah, exactly. Most of the ones we looked at use the J.T. Baker SAFT data scores. Essentially giving it like a, it's kind of like character classes in Dungeons and Dragons, right? It's health rating, it's flammability rating, reactivity rating, contact rating, etc. I'm not going to deal with all these, but as far as hydrochloric acid goes, its health rating is a 3, which is severe, like a poison level.
Yeah.
0 on flammability, reactivity rating is a 2, contact rating is 3, that means it's severe, it's corrosive. Do not touch it.
So you need to, if you're handling this stuff in the lab, you need some protective measures in place.
Yeah, it's highly corrosive, so it's dangerous for us to inhale. If we should not come into contact with it on our eyes, on our skin. Do not ingest it. You don't want to undergo chronic light exposure to it either. When it's heated to decomposition, it emits toxic hydrogen chloride fumes and will react with water or steam to produce heat and toxic and corrosive fumes.
Yeah, but of course, as I mentioned earlier, despite all this, you've got hydrochloric acid in your body.
That's right. I mean, this is the stomach acid. This is part of you. And really, that's an important thing to keep in mind with acids in general. Like, acids are part of our chemical world.
Yeah.
Acids are part of the chemistry of life. They're part of our biochemistry in varying degrees. So, yeah, even though we like to position acid in that vat of man-made peril, it's really just a part of our world. So Parietal cells produce hydrochloric acid in our body. It's a strong acid, helps you break down your food. The acid in your stomach is so concentrated that if you were to place a drop on a piece of wood, it would eat right through it.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the G cells produce gastrin, a hormone that facilitates the production of hydrochloric acid by the parietal cells. So the stomach, because of course one of the big questions is, well, why doesn't the acid in our stomach consume us, right?
Yeah.
Well, the stomach is protected by the epithelial cells, which produce and secrete a bicarbonate-rich solution that coats the mucosa.
Okay, so that's taking the method of saving the Batman by dumping a bunch of baking soda into the vat.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, putting in a base.
Exactly. The bicarbonate is an alkaline. A base neutralizes the acid that's secreted by those parietal cells, producing water in the process. And this continuous supply of bicarbonate is the main way that your stomach protects itself from autodigestion and the overall acidic environment of your tummy.
So it sounds like this process of creating the base to neutralize it is not something you want going wrong in your body.
Right. Yeah, that's why you generally want a good balance in your stomach chemistry. Yeah.
Okay, so hydrochloric acid, that's nothing to be toyed around with.
Right.
But there are stronger and more dangerous acids out there. And I think maybe we should move on. So if hydrochloric acid was sort of the, the Riddler of the acid rogues gallery, I think it's time to move on to the Joker.
Yes, the Joker would definitely be sulfuric acid.
Darn right.
Yeah, and this is one, I would say of all the acids, their technical names, sulfuric acid is the one that is most commonly used in fiction. Yeah. Granted, not without a real deep understanding of what it is, but like the name itself sounds a little scary. Sulfur, it's hellish, right? Sulfuric.
Yeah.
The name itself sounds a little bit evil.
Well, chemically, it's H2SO4. So that's hydrogen with sulfur and oxygen. And it forms this molecule that is very, very keen to protonate.
Oh, yes. So it's a clear, oily liquid. It's odorless, so sorry, Bank Vault, dude.
Yeah, both of these so far are clear, right?
Yeah, yeah, nothing green.
Why not green or orange?
It's also miscible with water, which means that it forms a homogeneous mixture when added to water, liberates a fair amount of heat. And it's highly corrosive and dangerous to humans just across the board, much like hydrochloric acid.
So how does it compare in terms of the rating? So hydrochloric acid, for the health rating, we had a 3, and for the contact corrosivity rating, we had a 3, right?
Right.
A 3 on both?
Yeah, and had a 2 for reactivity.
Yeah.
And a 0 for flammability. This time around, we have another 0 for flammability. However, reactivity went up from a 2 to a 3, so we have severe water reactivity here. And then as far as health rating goes, we have another 3, so it's just as severe. It's poisonous. But contact rating goes up from 3 to 4, from severe to extreme, so it's extremely corrosive.
How do they decide what word goes with that? I might say severe is worse than extreme.
Well, I don't know. It's going to be specific to the J.T. Baker SAFT data score, I guess. Because
I need a good poet to go through and annotate this data sheet.
Instead of like a single word, like a nice description.
Exactly.
Of everyone's encounter with it. Or an example from a movie, right? Like this is a, this is a Mortal Kombat 2 level acid.
Yeah. So if you're going for this movie kind of acid, I think we're getting more into the territory here of acids that are really going to maybe not behave exactly like the movie acid you're used to, but get closer to that than many other things would.
Right. Now, some other bad stuff about sulfuric acid. When heated to decomposition, it produces toxic fumes of oxides of sulfur. It will react with water or steam to produce toxic and corrosive fumes. It reacts with carbonates to generate carbon dioxide gas, and with cyanides and sulfides to form poisonous hydrogen cyanide and hydrogen sulfide, respectively.
All sounds lovely.
Yeah. So, again, that's something, though, that is often, I don't feel like that's utilized, the resulting toxic gas of acid interactions in films. Like,
yeah.
We're so concerned with what happens when the xenomorph blood gets on you or your armor or the floor, but how about any resulting fumes?
Well, yeah, we're always so much more concerned with liquids than with gases. One example is volcanoes in movies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, volcanoes in real life, I think they're way more likely to suffocate and kill you with gases emitted or by covering you in ash and ejecta and stuff like that. But what you see in the movies is the lava. People are running away mm-hmm. from liquid lava rolling down the hill toward them. A volcano is very likely to kill you, but it's very not likely to kill you that way.
Another thing that, and this is going off topic a little bit, but flamethrowers in a confined space.
Yeah.
It's a staple of our entertainment, and yet it is such a bad idea to just rapidly consume. I mean, a flamethrower in general is a bad idea, a real flamethrower.
Oh, yeah. Quick way to suffocate yourself.
Yeah, it's a great way to suffocate yourself, and it's rarely is that explored. The only example I can think of offhand is that there is a wonderful Nazi zombie film from the 70s or 80s titled Shockwaves. And there's a scene where they don't have a flamethrower, but they light some flares, I think, to ward off the creatures. And they're in a confined space, and it just eats up all the oxygen, and everybody's like gasping for breath. And I remember at the time thinking, ah, thank you, movie, for thinking a little bit.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Okay, but back to sulfuric acid. So sulfuric acid, based on how dangerous it sounds, you're probably never going to have this in your home, right? Well, not necessarily.
Oh, no.
Now, you might be able to get sulfuric acid in the home in some diluted concentrations. So a 1998 study in the Journal of Trauma and Acute Care Surgery that I came across was called Cutaneous Burns Caused by Sulfuric Acid Drain Cleaner.
Oh.
Yeah, pretty horrible. So a lot of the commercial drain cleaner you're going to be getting is actually going to be based in a strong base rather than a strong acid. So it might have something kind of like lye in it to dissolve materials in the drain, to do some alkaline hydrolysis and clear it out, get all that hair and gunk out of there. But also there are some preparations made with strong acids, such as highly concentrated solutions of sulfuric acid. And some people will sell these and you can buy them. And this has caused accidental and sometimes intentional burns in the home. So this study looked at a period of 13 years ending in May 1996, looking at children and adults who sustained sulfuric acid burns in the home through products like these. And it looked at 21 patients. There were 13 kids and 8 adults. And I just want to read the results. They say in 8 instances, the sulfuric acid burn was accidental, whereas in 13 cases, sulfuric acid was used as a weapon. Median total body surface area burned was 5%, or a range of 1% to 25%. Approximately 50% of burns involved the face and the neck. Skin grafting was required in 14 patients, or 66%. And it's estimated that nationwide, approximately 3,000 injuries per year are related to drain cleaners, and that 1/3 of these involve cutaneous burns. So this is one kind of scary fact about what sulfuric acid can do outside of the lab.
Yeah, and this does remind me that in a lot of films and TV and certainly in horror literature, drain cleaner is often used as that kind of household horror. This thing that is when used correctly is certainly just a part of our lives and we don't think about it, but if you turn it around, it becomes this horrible, inhuman thing. And I should also point out, some people might have missed this in this episode because it was kind of maybe we were burying the lead a little bit. But the most recent creepypasta episode that Christian and I did gets into the issue of acid attacks and the restoration of surgical restoration of individuals who have experienced acid attacks.
Yeah. So it mentions the grafting that was mentioned in this study. That's a horrible thing to think about it in real life being used as a weapon. Probably doesn't behave exactly the same way we do see the movie acid behaving, or certainly not as rapidly, but at the same time can cause very severe burns and damage to the body. So it's not something to mess around with.
Indeed.
But next, let's look at one more rogue in our rogues gallery of dangerous acids. And I think this one's going to be one of the most interesting. This is hydrofluoric acid, or HF, made of a bond of hydrogen and fluorine.
Let's look at the MSDS scores here on this one. So health rating. Our previous two examples were both 3, which were severe. This one is a 4.
Ooh.
This one is extremely poisonous. This one also has a 0 on flammability. Its reactivity rating is a mere 2, so that's down from 3 that we had on sulfuric acid. And then its contact rating is a 4, extremely corrosive, just like sulfuric acid.
Yeah.
So it's a colorless fuming liquid. It has a very, very acrid odor. Do not breathe the fumes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is infinitely soluble.
Now, this stuff, because of the nature of it, the hydrogen-fluorine bond or the hydrogen fluoride, it has a very unique sort of reactive profile.
That's right. On contact with metals, it liberates hydrogen gas. On heating to decomposition, it can yield toxic fumes of fluorides. And it attacks glass and other silicon-containing compounds. It reacts with silica to produce silicon tetrafluoride, which is also a hazardous colorless gas.
Yeah. Now, we should linger on that last fact for a moment, because what did we say here? Hydrogen fluoride can dissolve glass.
Yeah.
Most of the time, glass is great for storing chemicals because it's very non-reactive. You can put stuff in a glass container and it'll sit there. It doesn't react with what's inside it. Glass is made of mostly silicon dioxide, silica, same stuff as, you know, a lot of rocks and sand. But hydrogen fluoride smashes up those silicon dioxide bonds in order to replace them with silicon fluorine bonds. For this reason, you can't store it in glass. You have to store it in a special container, often one made out of something that won't react with it, like polyethylene plastic, but a few other materials will work. And I wanted to talk about a couple of videos that I found on the internet that are very interesting dealing with hydrogen fluoride.
And if you want to watch these, if you're in a position to watch these as you listen to the podcast episode, we will include links to these on the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Yeah, so these were done by a group that puts out chemistry videos on the internet called Periodic Videos or Periodic Table Videos. It's out of, I believe, the chemistry department of University of Nottingham. And they're a lot of fun. They do some experiments with some very unsettling chemicals. One of them was hydrogen fluoride.
Mm-hmm.
Where they decided to put a light bulb in the hydrogen fluoride. So it's a live light bulb with power running to it, lighting up, half submerged in a container of hydrogen fluoride. And what do you know, after a little while sitting in the solution, the glass part of the light bulb breaks off. And it breaks off in a very strange way, cleanly, with a circle around where the surface of the acid is lining the outside of the glass bulb.
Oh,
and
nice.
It just kind of shears it off as if it had been scored and then removed. And that, of course, is pretty freaky because then the filament immediately comes off and it starts kind of sparking. But then they did another video, which I thought was really interesting, and this one's really worth a watch. So this is comparing the flesh-dissolving properties of 3 different acids, actually the 3 we've just talked about.
This is the one I watched, and yeah, this one's a lot of fun.
It's fantastic. So in all 3 cases, what they did is they got a raw chicken leg, and they suspended it from a string partially submerged in the acid. And then the states of the 3 chicken legs are monitored. And the 3 acids they did, like we said, are the ones we've just talked about. Hydrogen chloride, or HCl, sulfuric acid, or H2SO4, and then hydrofluoric acid, or HF. Now, the sort of the profile we saw affecting the chicken leg was very similar for the hydrogen chloride and the sulfuric acid, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Yeah, they seem to do the same thing, which is that after about 5 minutes, not really any noticeable changes. I'm sure if that chicken leg could feel, it probably wouldn't feel good, but you don't really notice any burning on the outside. After 30 minutes, still nothing really noticeable. So this already is not exactly lining up with what we know about movie acid, right?
Right, and these are our best and our brightest acids.
Yeah, exactly. But overnight, some really interesting stuff started to happen with these two. So the previously clear solution takes on a dark pigment. And the part of the chicken that has been submerged has turned into this dark, viscous jelly that drips off of the bone when you lift it up. And then after that, they went whole hog where they cut the string and just dunked the whole chicken leg in. And it's gross. It just continues to darken the acid solution, turn it into this gloopy, darkened jelly, and it sort of begins to liquefy the outer layers of the chicken leg. Don't know what would have happened if they'd just kept it going for weeks. After a day, it was not looking good.
Right. It was thoroughly unappetizing. That is for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. People just don't. For some reason, you want to eat a piece of chicken, you don't want to eat some chicken jelly, but yet you like grape jelly.
Yeah. Well, there are different jellifications of flesh that are consumed, aren't there, in like French cuisine?
Oh, I suppose so. Yeah, that's right. What's it called? Aspic.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. Moving on now. So that's hydrogen chloride and sulfuric acid, but the real strange one contributing here is the hydrofluoric acid.
This being the one that we just covered, the one that dissolves glass.
Yeah. And so similar profile at the beginning, after 5 to 30 minutes, really not any significant observed changes. Like we said, it probably if you could be that chicken leg, it would not be pleasant. But just looking at it, nothing strange seems to have occurred. But again, overnight, some really crazy stuff starts to happen. Unlike the other two acid solutions, which darkened and took on the red pigment, this acid solution remains clear. And the part of the chicken leg submerged in the acid has sort of partially disappeared and has a white discoloration along the sheared away surface that looked to me, I don't know what you thought about this, it looked to me like frost or freezer burn.
Yeah. Yeah, it did have that kind of appearance.
Yeah, and then also the entire rest of the leg has become discolored. So all of the red pigment in the muscle, it looks like it's just been drained away. Mm-hmm. And even the part way up out of the acid has become pale white with greenish spots. It's lost its pink pigment. And then after they drop the whole thing in, when they cut the string, it looks almost like extremely overcooked boiled chicken.
Yeah.
Pale white all over, except for a little part sticking out, which looks green and diseased.
Like the worst example of steamer tray lunchroom chicken legs you can possibly imagine.
Yeah. And so I do recommend the video because the chemist who they talk to in the video has a theory about why this happens. And I'm not going to repeat his theory, but it's worth checking out. It's pretty interesting.
He also has wonderful, like, frizzy white hair. He's just a fabulous example of a British scientist.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will get into the realm of super acids, and then we will reconverge with the xenomorph. Hey, everybody. Trips to the post office are never convenient. So why not get postage right from your desk with Stamps.com? Stamps.com gives you special postage discounts you can't get at the post office, including first class, priority mail, express, international, and more. You'll never pay full price for postage again.
Yeah, so here's how Stamps.com works. It's pretty simple. You use your own computer and printer to buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package. Then you just hand the mail off to the mail carrier or drop it in the mailbox. You're done. That's it. It's that easy. And that's all. No wonder over 600,000 small businesses are already using Stamps.com.
Here in the office, we use Stamps.com when we need to send out the odd bit of merch or correspondence, and we want you to try it out as well.
So right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use our promo code STUFF for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes postage and a digital scale.
So don't wait. Get started with Stamps.com today. Go to Stamps.com right now before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in stuff. That's Stamps.com. Enter stuff and start mailing things.
Okay, here's a question. When does an acid become a super acid? We've talked about superheroes at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Batman is he a hero or a superhero? Well, he doesn't really have superpowers, but I guess he counts as a superhero.
Oh, yeah. He's got the costume. He's got the technology.
So, yeah, maybe if these other acids we just discussed, dissolving chicken legs, won't dissolve a Batman fast enough, you need a super acid to dissolve a superhero.
It seems like the kind of thing a supervillain would need to look into.
Exactly. So what is a super acid? Well, a super acid is an acid that is as strong as or stronger than 100% pure sulfuric acid. And why would you ever have anything like this? What's the point of it?
Well, acids are an incredibly important catalyst in the chemical industry, which maybe why they're in, you know, in these industrial settings in big open vats.
Yeah.
But they have a number of applications and potential applications in fuel cell technology and the chemical and petroleum industry. So, for instance, acids don't usually react with hydrocarbons, you know, such as oil, petroleum, but super acids do.
Yeah. And so we figured it's worth looking up. What's the strongest acid known to humankind? There is an answer to this question, right? It is fluoroantimonic acid, or HSBF6. Then this is, as far as we know, the strongest super acid on Earth. So what's the deal with it?
So this is made by combining hydrofluoric acid with antimony pentafluoride. And this is going to sound crazy, but the resulting acid is billions of times stronger than sulfuric acid.
Yeah, it's billions and billions of times, or just many orders of magnitude stronger mm-hmm. than sulfuric acid.
That is crazy.
Obviously, that is just... something we don't exactly know. Like, I couldn't find any videos that were clearly real of people dealing with this stuff. I couldn't find a lot of first-person accounts of people dealing with it. There's some research materials about it, but they don't really get into what exactly would happen by combining this with stuff. I imagine if you dipped a Batman in it, some stuff would go down.
Yeah, but I mean, we found numbers that were kind of all over the place, and there's no MSDS score for this. There's no SAFT data on this, so we can't even like look at numbers that put it. You know, they make a comparison between it and 100% sulfuric acid.
Right. But just based on what we do know about it, I think it's safe to assume that this stuff is incredibly dangerous. And
yes.
Dipping a Batman in it would have some consequences. But you might be wondering, you know, with an acid that strong, something that reactive, how would you even store it, right? Because
yeah.
with just the hydrogen, just with the HF, you've got this problem where you're dissolving glass containers. So what do you use to store it? This was an interesting piece of information I found cited in several sources. You can actually store it with something you keep around the house. It's something with a solid bond that really doesn't want to let go and bond with other stuff. It's Teflon,
huh.
PTFE, so
oh, wow.
Polytetrafluoroethylene. It's PTFE, and that's just a fluorine carbon bond molecule that's it's very monogamous. It just doesn't want to go bond with other stuff.
Huh. Interesting. All right. So if you are battling a lizard ninja that may or may not have super acid in its body, wear
yeah.
your Teflon ninja costume to battle it.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what Batman uses, I bet,
oh,
to sustain
yeah.
his encounters with vats of acid is a Teflon batsuit.
So this would be what McBain's underwear was made of in that scene we were talking about from The Simpsons, because when the flood of acid
oh,
washes him
true,
away
yeah.
and throws him through, I think, Milhouse's trailer,
uh-huh.
the acid like quickly eats off all of his clothing except
yeah.
for his underwear.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that was done for network censorship reasons rather than... than scientific accuracy reasons. But it could be Teflon underwear protects you from the acid. Though I don't know if that would work with every acid.
That's true.
I just have to assume if it works for the strongest acid in the world, it's going to be generally pretty effective.
All right, so Joe, at this point we've talked about what Hollywood acids look like.
Yeah.
We've talked about the real properties of acids, and we're already seeing how they don't really match up to our Batman dissolving needs.
Doesn't mean they're not dangerous. Some
no,
of them
no,
are
no, certainly
incredibly
dangerous,
but they don't behave exactly like we want them to make Batman burn.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, are there other things in our natural world that do behave like these fictionalized substances?
Well, still probably not exactly. You're not going to get the green bubbling, instant dissolving you kind of thing. But in many cases, I think if you want a chemical that burns through human flesh more like it does in the movies, what you want is not necessarily a strong acid, but a strong base on the opposite end of the pH scale, such as lye, which would be usually sodium hydroxide, NaOH, or potassium hydroxide, KOH. And so I want to bring to your mind a scene from a movie you might or might not have seen. You've seen Fight Club, right?
Oh, yes.
You remember the scene in Fight Club where Brad Pitt and Edward Norton, they're sitting around a table and they're making soap, because this is a plot point in the movie. And one of the ingredients in making soap, and this is true, is lye. And in the scene, Brad Pitt, he takes Edward Norton's hand and he kisses him on the hand, and then he pours lye across the wet spot where his lips were.
Uh-huh.
And this causes a reaction that begins to burn Edward Norton's hand. And for the sake of, you know, a kind of macho and somewhat grandiose sense of carpe diem, Brad Pitt convinces Edward Norton to just sit there and endure the pain of the chemical burn instead of washing off the lye. And he also tells him that washing it off with water would only make it worse, and eventually he uses vinegar to neutralize the acid. Now, you shouldn't take your chemical safety information from a podcast. We are not chemical safety experts, and you should always consult those real experts before dealing with strong acids or bases. But from everything I've read, Brad Pitt's wisdom about the vinegar here is not exactly true. It is true that a strong base like lye is activated in the presence of water, and that you can use acids to neutralize bases. But if you've got lye on you, my non-expert opinion is that your first priority is just get it off you. Get it off your skin as fast as possible, rather than running around looking for a crate of lemons to squeeze on and neutralize it. Washing it off with water would be one way, but you just want it off your skin as fast as possible. Also worth pointing out that commercial vinegar is mostly water. It's acetic acid, but it's highly diluted with water. But yes, in any case, this is an example of what strong bases can do to the skin. And in some ways, the scene is kind of accurate. Like a strong base like a lye in the presence of water on the skin can definitely burn you. It can cause bad chemical burns and can definitely truly dissolve human flesh under the right conditions. This is one thing we also see the movie acid being used for. It's like the mafia hitmen in the movie have some vat of acid in their basement, and they whack somebody and they put them into the vat of acid and it dissolves them.
Right.
But studies have actually shown that if you really want to dissolve a human body, we're not trying to give anybody pointers on how to commit murder dispose of evidence.
This is just science presented by the Mafia Science Institute in New York. Yeah.
Apparently, the better way to do that would be with a strong base rather than a strong acid for fully dissolving flesh. And one piece of evidence for this is something we've actually talked about on the podcast before. in, you remember the episode we did last October about the future of the dealing with human remains?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And green burials and stuff like that. And so the method, one method we talked about is known as alkaline hydrolysis. And this is a method of disposing of cadavers. It's used by lots of medical facilities. And there's increasing interest in using it as a cheaper and greener alternative to traditional burial and cremation. And essentially it goes like this. You put the body into a pressurized chamber that contains a mixture of water and lye. So here's your strong base. And then you heat the chamber to around 160 degrees Celsius or, you know, over 300 degrees Fahrenheit. And the body is liquefied in just a few hours and it can be washed down the drain. And any remaining bone fragments, they can be pulverized and dealt with however you want. But it, now, obviously, the heat and the pressure here are playing a big role in what's going on. But the strong base is crucial. It's an MVP dissolver of organic material such as a human body or an animal carcass or a Batman. And so one of my suggestions is that maybe we should start replacing movie acids in our fiction with movie bases.
I think part of the problem is that acid sounds cooler. Acid is more, even though I think most people know that you have acids and bases.
Yeah.
It's like the, just the word itself, acid.
Yeah.
Instead of like base, you know, like which one is just like linguistically potent?
Yeah. For fictional purposes, which one sounds scarier, to be protonated or to be deprotonated?
Yeah. And then, of course, acid. I mean, we talk about, oh, well, that person has a really, you know, acidic attitude or something. You know, it's like it's
right.
Acid is just going to make your sentence that much stronger. It's going to make your threat to the superhero that much stronger.
Yeah, it has more resonance despite the fact that it might not be as great a wonderful dissolver of organic material as
right.
something like lye. But yeah, I'm ready, Robert, for you to take us back to the Nostromo.
All right. Well, you know, my motion detector is going off here.
Beep. Beep.
I think it's actually coming from inside the room at this point. So yeah, let's talk about the Xenomorph.
Yeah, okay. So we mentioned this earlier in the episode. This is one fantastic example of movie acid. I think it's probably my favorite movie acid is the alien's blood, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's so well utilized and feels like a real threat and helps to just position the creature. You know, we can barely touch it. Like,
yeah.
We can barely wound it, and when we do, wounding it might kill us.
Yeah, so we've described sort of what happens in the scene. In the first scene where they use it, there are many different ways the acid appears throughout all of the movies that have aliens in them. But it typically always burns and dissolves things. It's you don't want to get it on you. It might kill you. It might burn you. But is there anything we can relate this acid to in the real world? Could an organism really behave this way, and what might its acid blood be?
Ah, well, this is a fantastic question. But before I get into it, I do want to mention that as a fun note, there is an older monster, perhaps the most famous monster in Western literature, that also boasted corrosive blood, and that's Grendel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've read...
From Beowulf.
It's been so long, yeah, since I've read Beowulf. I've certainly read things since then that have Grendel in them.
Yeah.
But it's been so long, I didn't even realize this. I sort of rediscovered this in our research.
This is crazy. So, of course, Beowulf is a classic of Anglo-Saxon literature, Old English literature, where, you know, you got this epic, the hero Beowulf goes in to slay the monster that's been harassing this, I don't know, would you even call it a town, this encampment of humans.
Yeah.
And so what's the deal? So he goes in to slay Grendel and he encounters some acid blood?
Yeah, basically, like he ends up getting this special sword. And then at the end, he rips off Grendel's arm, wounds him.
Yeah.
Follows Grendel back to his lair, cuts his head off. And then the blood from the beheading, it melts the blade. This is a translation, obviously. But the sword blade began then, the blood having touched it, contracting and shriveling with battle. Icicles. 'Twas a wonderful marvel that it melted entirely. So it's my understanding that you could kind of interpret this as maybe his blood is really hot and just melted it, you know, as in a, you know, a great fire, or that it's acidic, depending on your interpretation. Either way, that's quite an adaptation on the part of the Grendel organism.
Oh man, I wonder if this is the oldest single version of the creature that spits toxic chemicals.
Maybe, you know, I can't think of another mythic creature that has this.
They breathe fire, but
yeah, there's certainly fire breathing. But yeah, as far as acids or something that is corrosive, that is, you know, destroying the weapons that are used against it. I can't think of one offhand.
Yeah. Huh. Crazy. Well, anyway, we should return to our modern example, though. So imagine Beowulf goes in to slay a xenomorph. He'd have exactly the same problem, right? The xenomorph queen's in there. She's been harassing the town. He takes in his special sword. He lops off its head, and the sword melts, right?
Yes, the sword melts. Now, you got the job done, but yeah, your magical weapon is ruined.
Yeah, maybe spraying him on the face in the process and killing him.
Yes.
Getting the last laugh after all.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's Beowulf, so he'd probably dodge it. I always have this thing. I always sympathize with Grendel.
I've
yet to see an adaptation of the story where I'm like, oh, yeah, Beowulf's a good dude. I can get behind him. I always sympathize with the monster.
Well, I mean, yeah, Grendel's the loner. Well, maybe one of the first places we should look to see what the alien's blood might be would be to look behind the scenes in the movie and see, okay, so how do they create the special effect? In the alien movies, you see the aliens spill their blood. Like in the first movie in Ridley Scott's film, you see it spill on the floor. It burns through the floor and it just keeps burning through floors until finally it stops. What was going on there? Well, I found some accounts online of where this special effect came from. And supposedly it was created by the alien special effects supervisor, Brian Johnson. And the acid effect was essentially a combination of some various chemicals. And then that was applied to, and this is pretty clever, styrofoam floors.
Oh, okay.
They made styrofoam ship hull. I don't know what styrofoam stuff that would be the floors of the ship, and then spray painted it silver to make it look like it was metal.
What's the name of the company? The corporation?
Weyland-Yutani.
Maybe they were just super cheap, and they're like cheap styrofoam
ships. That's great. I'm sure that's what it was. But in any sense, so what was it made of? Well, the blood they had was made of chloroform, acetone, cyclohexylamine, and acetic acid, which is vinegar, pretty much. Acetic acid is diluted to create vinegar, and then some other compounds. But I thought this is funny because acetic acid, yes, of course, is an acid diluted in water to make vinegar with some other flavorings. Acetone is not an acid. That's neutral, a neutral pH of 7. Cyclohexylamine is a base. And then of course, it had chloroform and stuff. And apparently, it eats through styrofoam all right, but it probably wouldn't eat through a real spacecraft's hull. Mm-hmm. And one of the big reasons it eats through styrofoam is probably the presence of acetone. I don't know if you've ever seen videos of what happens when you pour acetone on a styrofoam wig head or something like that.
I don't think I've seen those videos. No.
If you ever want to make a head melt for a bunch of children, this is a fun party trick. But just don't get any of the.
Well, I'll keep that in mind for my son's fifth birthday.
Yeah, so like here's the head of your enemy, and you just pour some acetone on that styrofoam head, and it just oh no, it melts.
Oh,
so it works great for a special effect, but probably would not work for a real organism that wanted to melt through metal and plastic and all of the other stuff that probably makes up a ship.
Yeah, and want is a good. It's a good verb to use here, because of course that brings up the question, like, well, how does this occur? Is this an evolved trait? Is this an engineered trait? What is the origin of the xenomorph then, depending on how these work? But I have a couple of proposals here,
okay,
as to what could be going on with the xenomorph. So my first more modest and explosive proposition is this, and I'm sure that this doesn't match up to everybody's interpretation of the franchise or every entry of the franchise, but
right.
Here's the thing. Okay, so we see the thing bleeding acid when it's harmed.
Right, you shoot it, cut it, whatever, acid shoots out.
And of course, we also see it using the acid offensively occasions, such as when that facehugger melts through the glass dome on the helmet.
Oh, yeah, it didn't have to cut itself to do that.
Right, it somehow just utilized it,
secreted
right?
Secreted this.
So what if this isn't the creature's blood at all, really? Not properly, but rather an acid stored throughout the body to react to physical harm that in turn harms the attacker.
That's interesting, because it wouldn't have to be the blood, would it?
I mean, right.
This wouldn't have to be the substance that's circulating molecular oxygen to the body tissues.
Right. It wouldn't be serving other purposes in the body. It would be there expressly to rupture during physical harm to harm or destroy the attacker.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we see something very similar, really identical, in terrestrial termites and ants, who also serve a queen. You know, they also, I mean, the termite had a huge influence on especially aliens.
Yeah.
So So we call this practice, autophysis. And this is the process by which a natural world organism destroys itself via the internal rupturing of an organ or gland that in turn ruptures the skin. So it's a purely muscular exercise caused by deliberate contractions around the engorged tissue.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because this is the kind of thing that apparently evolved from pooping on your enemy. Like, what started off is like poop on the enemy when they attacked
defensive
and invade.
Defensive defecation.
Yeah, defensive defecation. But then it becomes like, if you can't get that poop out of the anus fast enough, just like make it rupture through your body. And that has steadily evolved over time into more complex modes of self-rupturing. And the body buster par excellence here is Neocapitermes terracula. And this is a fabulous organism. So the species workers grow abdominal sacs of toxic blue crystals throughout their lives. But these explosive backpacks, as some studies refer to them, are most pronounced in elderly workers. So,
oh, okay. So as they become less useful to the colony, yeah, they sort of turn into the suicide bombers.
Exactly. Like, you know, you have dull and useless mandibles. You're really not that much use, but you've become a stockpile for toxic substances, and that becomes your purpose. When enemies invade the termite mound, they just rush forward. The invaders then bite into their bodies, and that's when the blue crystals combine with salivary secretions to produce a deadly chemical weapon.
Huh.
So that would mean that the xenomorph here would simply boast a system of pressurized acid tubes, and it's merely the rupture of those tubes that we see, and is therefore an act of autophysis. So this would be like highly concentrated stomach acid or something else that has evolved into this defensive mode.
Yeah, and of course we do see from our own stomach, so like we talked about earlier, that it's possible for a body to contain within it some concentration of acid that would be very damaging if we encountered it externally or in the wrong part of the body. You just need specialized cells along whatever, you know, body tissue is containing it to buffer it, essentially, to keep it from reacting with the rest of the body.
Exactly. Now, of course, all of this is taking a very terrestrial approach to it. It's taking a very carbon-biased, water-biased approach.
Yeah.
But of course, not all modes of life, not all biochemistries out there are necessarily based on carbon or based on water.
Hmm.
So we might have to take it a bit further. What sort of organism might have blood that is either incidentally or adaptively corrosive, at least to our sort of flesh? Well, perhaps they're silicon-based life forms as opposed to carbon-based. So even here on Earth, we have silicic acid, which is a very weak acid in our hair, our nails, our epidermis. So it seems conceivable that this or perhaps hexafluorosilicic acid might play into a silicone-based xenomorph's anatomy.
Huh.
And this is the exact sort of biochemistry that could enable a life form to thrive in a sulfuric acid-rich environment. Now, I'm not sure it could be as potent as what we see in the films, but this is an area where I think, you know, if there are any biochemists listening, you'll have to weigh in on that for us.
Yeah, well, I mean, how reactive would an acid or whatever the chemical is, maybe it's a strong base actually that it's releasing, how strong would it have to be to really eat through the hull that fast? Is there any chemical that would really eat through the hull that fast? I don't know about that. Maybe what if it has the fluoroantimonic acid in it?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is for a defense, you know, if you're thinking about something that has evolved this as a basic defense against humanoid creatures that are at least semi-human,
yeah,
like all you wouldn't need a very strong acid or base at all to just like get in their eyes and give you a moment's advantage in some sort of an altercation.
Right.
But anyway,
it seems as if it's an organism perfectly conceived to be unkillable on a spaceship for plot purposes.
Indeed. It is a perfect organism. Now, some experts, including the late, great Carl Sagan, have speculated that alternate astrobiologies could still entail carbon, but depend on something other than water as the solvent, such as ammonia or perhaps hydrofluoric acid.
What?
Yeah. And of course, this is crazy because we mentioned the face hugger burning through the presumably glass helmet.
Yeah.
And what does hydrofluoric acid do? But it can break down glass, as we mentioned.
Yeah, of course. Now, it does take a while.
Yes.
Again, one of the things that's always not quite matching up right between the movie acid and the acid in the real experiments we're talking about is just rapidity.
Yes.
It's just the time it takes to dissolve things.
Right. Everything's instant in the films, and it doesn't seem to be that way with real chemistry. So here's a quote from Sagan in 1980's Cosmos, his book. Perhaps elsewhere some solvent other than water is used. Hydrofluoric acid might serve rather well. Although there is not a great deal of fluorine in the cosmos, hydrofluoric acid would do a great deal of damage to the kind of molecules that make us up. But other organic molecules, paraffin waxes, for example, are perfectly stable in its presence.
I like your Carl Sagan voice.
It's not that great of a voice. What we need is Chuck to come in and do his Kermit the Frog voice.
Oh, yeah?
Which I think also sounds very Sagan-y.
I don't think I've ever heard that one.
Oh, you should ask him to do a little Kermit, but read some Cosmos.
I think your Carl Sagan's pretty good, man. don't put yourself down.
All right. Well, you know, well, Sagan's not the only one to chime in on this. Plenty of other biochemists have also looked at, you know, possible alternate biochemistries. And they've presented sulfuric acid as a possibility. So it's certainly more cosmically common.
Yeah.
You know, so it would make sense. In the 2007 book, The Limits of Organic Life in Planetary Systems, and this is a book by a number of authors. It's credited authors are the Committee on the Limits of Organic Life in Planetary Systems, the National Research Council, and a few other bodies. I'm not going to list them all. But in a chapter titled Why Water Toward More Exotic Habitats, they state the following, quote, sulfuric acid is a reasonably good solvent that supports chemical reactivity. Sulfuric acid is known to exist above Venus, where three cloud layers at 40 to 70 kilometers are composed mostly of aerosols of sulfuric acid, about 80% in the upper layer and a 98% in the lower layer. The temperature, about 310 Kelvin at about 50 kilometers altitude at about 1.5 ATM is consistent with stable carbon-to-carbon covalent bonds.
Huh.
So the take-home here is that, yes, it is conceivable that we would have a carbon-based life form in which the solvent is sulfuric acid. It's reasonable. Now, whether that life could actually match up to the just profound standards that we've set with the xenomorph, that's another issue.
Yeah. Are you breaking my heart, Robert? Are you telling me that there's probably not a xenomorph anywhere in our solar system?
I'm saying that the xenomorph exists in the realm of forms.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But the universe that we live in, it may be at least willing to meet us halfway.
Well, even a pale imitation of a xenomorph would be welcome to my ears.
Yes. So
in my eyes, as it burned them out.
So if you live to be several thousand years old, your life prolonged by all the various technologies available to you, and you set yourself on the perfect death. You want to die via the acidic blood of an alien species.
Mm-hmm.
There is maybe some hope.
So, Robert, I've enjoyed exploring this with you because I've always loved movie acid, and I wonder what it is that captivates us so much about acid. I want to go back to that question I started with. Why, you know, they put Batman in the bank vault.
Okay.
And, oh, no, it's boiling acid. It could have been boiling water or even room temperature water, and it still would have killed him. But that wouldn't be nearly as interesting. For some reason, we want acid. Why is acid so interesting as a way to kill people when you could get the same thing done with just a hot normal liquid? You know, it could be hot bleach. I mean, well, yeah, that would be a pretty weird, interesting way to kill people. But hot water, boiling water, that people would be like, huh? Why didn't you go to acid?
Well, for one thing, boiling water is every day, right?
Yeah.
Or if not every day, it's like even like most people have some experience of putting the macaroni in the boiling water.
Yeah. And I think that's right. I think heating is a method of changing the chemical nature of something that's very familiar to us, whereas the chemical reactions that take place and the bond breaking that takes place when you've got an acid solution of water, that's something that's less familiar to us. We don't understand what's going on there, and for that reason, it's kind of like magic.
Yeah, it's to the average viewer, like a bad guy dissolving in acid makes as much scientific sense as one Ron Silver touching another Ron Silver in Time Cop and then becoming a big red goo of melt.
Right. But that's why they're both wonderful. They capture the magic of nonsense.
Exactly.
They put it right into your face.
Or on the face. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, so there you have it. Hollywood Acid. So again, you want to check out more episodes of the podcast. You want to check out the links we were talking about, some related material, head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's where you'll find all our podcasts, including this one. The landing page will have some cool links to related content on the site and off the site. That website will also have videos, blog posts, links out to our social media accounts such as Facebook and Twitter. We are Blow the Mind on both of those. We're Stuff to Blow Your Mind on Tumblr and Instagram, I believe. So check those out as well.
And if you want to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, or you want to let us know what your questions or ideas are, you can always email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.